outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gen.
Before I roll the podcast, I need to make a brief announcement. Y'all have been so gracious and generous whenever we have needs in Kenya, and we've got a new one there now. One to help rescue an orphanage, the other to print books of just love that may make their way into the public school system in Kenya. Both those needs are highlighted on my blog at lifestream.org, and you can link to it at the notes at the bottom of this podcast. If you have some extra money and would like to help us, we'd greatly appreciate it. Now, welcome to the God Journey. Well, Kyle, at least I'm not having a stroke.
Not having a stroke.
No, that's good news.
Why did you think you were having a stroke?
Sunday afternoon, I sat down to watch a little bit of golf, and I could see on the same green, two flagpoles and two golf balls.
Okay.
So I'm thinking, this is not good.
And did somebody slip something in your Diet Coke?
I tried to blink my eyes. I tried to do everything, and it persists. And it's been something that has happened to me, say, half a dozen times in the last 3 years. Once while driving the RV, all of a sudden I see double. I'm like, I could usually, you know, shake my head, whatever, and within 5-6 seconds, it would all come back to normal.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen Sunday. So I've had double vision ever since Sunday in my intermediate and distant range. Up close, I'm fine. I can read. I can see everything close. It's just one of everything. And then when it gets out further, it starts seeing multiple things.
Yeah, that had to be a little spooky, or still is a little spooky.
Yeah, I asked my AI about it. I said, getting double vision, distance range, should be concerned. Call 911 immediately or go to a hospital. That's how it responded. And I went,
oh, geez.
Okay, now I don't think it's that. I'm not going to go there. I tried to make an appointment with my ophthalmologist. It was going to take 3 days to get in to see her.
Yeah.
So my son-in-law deals with eye stuff. He's a surgical sales rep. So he got me into an ophthalmologist this morning. Sarah and I got in there right away and found out it's just some muscle issue in back of one of my eyes that isn't tracking. It's not focusing as naturally with the other one as it used to. So I guess the precursors of that back there was something's going wrong here and I could keep adjusting for it.
Yeah.
But now it muscle gave up. It's just not going to adjust for it anymore. So I got to get new lenses, which I just got. So that's crazy. I got to buy all new lenses from my prescription glasses and my regular glasses, and found out one of those things that's so dumb about the way we do commercial stuff in America. It was cheaper for me to buy two lenses and two new frames, or four lenses and two new frames, than it was to just get lenses to fill my already new frames.
Jeez. Does it give incentives or something?
You got to be kidding. You can't just get lenses. No, because the frames give discounts for lenses as a way to suck people into buying their particular frame. I hate commercialism. I hate how so many of our industries work. It is completely wasteful.
Yeah.
Now, we will send them on. Send me a lot of email. I will send my former frames and lenses on to the Lions Club International, which does distribute those to people who need them. So I guess it's just a good cause for generosity. But I hadn't planned on spending all that money for two new frames and four new lenses.
So what happens with the Lions Club? I'm not familiar with this program.
Oh, they recycle frames from wherever. You just send them to an address back in New York or something. And then they take care of them. They help. I don't know how they get them to people whose prescription is somewhat similar to yours, but they can do that. So
that's interesting you say that, because I have a friend who's connected with the Lions Club and they're starting to offer free vision checks and then free frames to people. Yeah. And so especially lower income or people in need who don't have insurance to be able to cover it. So I'm guessing that must be that program.
Vision is a big thing that they've always done. They've always done stuff with the needy and helping improve vision around the world and domestically. So
that's super cool.
I don't know how I knew about that, but we just found one. Last time I lost a pair of glasses, I had to go through and try and find a pair that would simulate them until I could replace them. I had this drawer full of old glasses. So I went, oh gosh, I need to get rid of these. So we did. We just checked online and found an address and sent them all off.
Nice. Okay. Yeah.
So I guess God wanted us to be generous with somebody else that needs glasses. But anyway, I've really had that scripture on my heart all the last 2 days about being double-minded or being double-visioned. Man, it is difficult to navigate the world
Oh my gosh.
I had to meet Lewis downtown yesterday because we're trying to get the boys. We got a chance to get him into a facility. Okay. And so we got to jump through a bunch of city hoops. So I was down there to help him jump through those hoops. And I was navigating driving, which it said that the AI said I shouldn't drive, which actually it didn't say I shouldn't. It said, do not drive. But I thought, I got to get down there. So I'll just drive. I'll be fine. Well, I was okay until I got downtown. I turned onto this main road downtown.
Yeah.
There were twice as many cars and there was construction going on. So there was cones. There was like, I could see 4,000 cones everywhere. And I was so disoriented. I went right by the parking lot I was supposed to go in. And I go, yeah, this is dangerous. I am not going. So I did manage to drive home. And I do that by looking only in front of my car.
At the first couple of lines that are right there.
I just look at the nose of my car and try and keep my peripheral on brake lights that may come on in front of me. I'm good that way. It's kind of a mess, but what are you going to do? Getting old, the outer man wasting away. But when you think about double-mindedness, I mean, that just made that come alive because you really can't focus. And it's more a general sense of disorientation. And by the end of the day, both days now, including this one, third, you end up with a bit of a headache at the end of the day because it just everything's straining to make sense of whatever. Yeah. Life takes another turn. This is what it is to get old, Kyle. So run. You can run. Run.
Well, as we're talking about this, I'm literally reaching over because my glasses now are sitting next to me. I never wore glasses. I had 2018 vision all my life growing up. And then just over the last couple of years, I've had to start wearing glasses when I'm like staring at a computer or reading for long periods of time. Well, then I went out and some good friends of mine went up into the mountains and we did a 3D archery competition. And I could not see the targets through my peep sight. I had to get my glasses out so that I could see the targets clearly through my peep sight on my bow. I was like, oh no, now is the time. Like we're getting there. That's so not good.
So crazy, isn't it? I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to this episode of The God Journey. Hey, the trail guide's been quite a hit with most people.
Yeah, I haven't got a chance to play with it yet.
I did hear from a couple of folks that they were kind of, oh, please don't go the AI route, blah, 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 because it's all evil. And God knows, I'm not impartial to that point of view. I can go, yeah, I hear you. I think the world may have ultimately be destroyed by this monster. But in the meantime, if it can be used as a tool, I don't mind using it as a bit of a tool. Yeah. And I've had a couple just said, man, that trail guide saved my life this week. I really needed something. And I went there and searched for information. It referred me to a podcast. I heard the podcast and oh my gosh, it was what I needed today to be settled.
Oh, that's cool.
God's love for me. So I that's fun. My web guy after 2 days sent me a list of the 50 inquiries that have been made of the trail guide and what the answers were. And most of the answers were okay. One of them was asking, how does Brad Cummings feel about the shack? And he goes, I have no information about Brad Cummings and the shack. I'm like, okay, you moron. So we had to educate it. And then one of the times somebody asked a question and the answer was, well, Wayne hasn't shared that with me yet. And I'm going, so I wrote the web guy and said, okay, now it's too chummy. I don't want this to act like a person. So please, I didn't just say you can't access it. Anyway, we're tweaking it a bit, but
okay.
Overall, 95% of the answers it gave, I'm going, yep, that's what I would have said about that. Gleaning.
But you've been getting a little chummy with your AI lately. I mean, having it help you with this curriculum. And I mean, we've done a couple podcasts off of some of the content that we've gotten from it.
You I've got more today. Speaking of which, no, I'm actually going to, I think this trail guide is going to help people access information. And that to me is the best part of what AI is. AI is not your best friend. It doesn't substitute for relationships, but it, in a way of accessing information quickly.
Yeah.
It doesn't have too many equals. The next thing we're toying with doing is putting the My Friend Lewis story into book form. And I don't have time to write that. And so I'm talking to AI about taking the podcast transcripts and putting that in a book in Lewis's voice. So it's written on his behalf. And someone said, yeah, but wouldn't it be better if you would create all that? You said, it would be better, but I don't have time. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
So I know that'll concern some people. I've had it write two chapters already, and one of them was just too highfalutin. I said, I want in Lewis's voice. This doesn't sound like Lewis. This sounds like you. Yeah. You're right. I tried to write it very literarily, whatever, and it's very poetic. But the person I was talking to is a poet, and they were talking about how they labor over every word in a poem. And I know I have many friends now who have a thought from Jesus in their quiet time in the morning and throw it into the AI bot to write a poem for them or a song. Yeah. That's the dilemma right there. I'm like something to be seasoned with time and see what comes out of it. Anyway, best thing you heard this week?
Best thing I heard this week, it honestly came from a conversation that I had with my dad a couple of weeks ago, and it's from Colossians 3, chapter 3, 16 and 17. But the primary verse that really has stood out to me is, let the message of Christ in all its richness fill your life. That has been kind of the guiding prompt of my daily prayers as of the last few weeks of, Lord, what does it mean to let your message, to let your life in all its richness fill me today? What does that mean? What does that look like? How can I see the fulfillment of that in my day? Because that, man, especially thinking about parenting and dad duty, and now I'm transitioning back to the college. And it goes on to say, teach and counsel each other with the wisdom that he gives. And that, like, to me is really reiterated. Okay, Kyle, now you're stepping back into the world of creating opportunities and spaces for young people to really wrestle with some of the deepest heart content ideas out there. Yeah. And so, Lord, what does that look like for me to walk in that richness and to allow your richness to fill my life? That came out of a conversation with my dad and I, and I've been just meditating on that for quite a while. And it just, I mentioned it in the prayer conversation that we had the other day, and it just has continued to build in my heart. Yeah, that's what's been holding space for me. What about you?
Yeah, beautiful passage, draws us in a wonderful way. My concern with words like that, and it's scripture, so it's good stuff, but I think we help people keep that balance between aspirational and capacity. Because when people think about, let all the message come and fill me, and I'm often sitting with people who say, I don't know how to get all. I get a little bit. I get, and I said, you know, my journey is more glimpses. And there's periods of time where you could say, oh man, there's the fullness of something here, and I see clearly. But that's come over a long time of holding presence with God, which I hear you talking about. You know, that's been on your heart for a few weeks, so I'm holding space for that. And if people can separate between aspirational and the expectation of something that's unrealistic, because Paul even talks about knowing in part and seeing in part. We see through a glass darkly. And that's most of the journey. It's, aspirationally, I want to be filled with all the fullness of Christ. I want to see him completely in all his grandeur. I want to have all his wisdom about the stuff I'm dealing with in my life. But the reality is that seeps in.
Yes.
Wonderful ways in glimpses and bits, and never really is it all complete at one moment in time. Particularly the moment we're asking for it.
Well, and that's, I think, to me, it also reaffirms that, at least in my walk, it has been reiterated, like, the aspiration of continuing to be filled more and more by the totality of his love, of his richness. And yet it's also a regrounding of, oh, man, I have barely scratched the surface here. Yeah. This is, I'm just barely getting started here. So don't get content. Don't get lackadaisical in the continued pursuit and orienting of my heart towards what God's got for me today.
Yeah. And I think fullness, when we look at capacity and aspiration, I think fullness comes from being filled to our capacity. Which isn't all of everything, every minute. I've got all wisdom, all grace, complete trust. It's not that. But When the fullness of the Spirit walks in our life, I think it fills to the capacity that we have for him. And as that capacity grows, then fullness will become a bigger thing. Yeah. But it's no less fullness when capacity is small. as is when capacity is large, because it's still fullness.
Yeah.
And if we could wrap our heads around that, I think it's part of that conversation of capacity versus aspiration, and hold to the aspirations that are profound and wonderful. Just don't get your expectations tied to it in a way that you live in then frustration, disappointment. This is not what I thought it was going to be. Yeah. When you're growing in it, when it's coming to grow in your life.
I definitely want to circle back to that conversation at some point about capacity, because that's an intriguing thought. That's the first time I'm hearing you kind of unpack that. Or dang, okay, they've got their $20. I made it through last week without using intriguing the entire time. I was like, oh, I just tanked their budget for
that. And I missed that. I'm totally not focused on this, but well done, sir.
Anyway, no, I want to circle back to that, because I think the idea of capacity and how God moves in our life and the amount of his kingdom that is moving through our life is connected to the capacity that we have to be able to contain that, to be able to host that, to lean into it.
That's, to respond to it, you bet. But yeah. Consult the trail guide. Then you can have that little conversation.
Oh, okay, there we go. Jeez. What about you?
I heard this in an interview with Ben Sasse, who's a senator, former senator from Nebraska.
Yeah. Yep.
Did I use this already?
No, I don't know. So. We've talked about Ben Sasse before.
Yeah. Anyway, he's dying of pancreatic cancer, unless God intervenes in some way. It's really serious. He's creeping up on very serious stages of it. And that CT, Christianity Today, did an interview with him. And he said this: when life is going well and it's beautiful sunny day and your kids aren't in trouble and you don't have any debt collectors staring you down, when it feels like all of life is working well, it's pretty easy to believe in the myth of our self-sufficiency. I love the way that turned from just, that's the life everybody wants. It's a beautiful sunny day, although not too hot, as you guys have been experiencing up there in Wyoming. And your kids aren't in trouble and everything, and you have enough money for what you need to do, blah, blah, blah. Then we get sucked into the myth of self-sufficiency, which is a great twist on that. Oof. He's one of the few men of character we've had in Congress of late. And it's kind of sad to see him not be able to continue at that point. So. I hope to sit down with him someday, have a chat on the other side.
Do you think he would join us on the God Journey podcast?
I don't even know how to get to him. I'm sure the requests for interviews are significant, and we're not up in the charts of whatever. Speaking of which, let me read an email, and then we'll plunge into some serious stuff.
Okay.
Not that this isn't. This is from Judy. I want to tell you how much the AI summarized the God Journey, which we did a couple months ago, in such a beautiful way. It really aligned with how I feel about it and my own personal journey. My eyes were so opened when I first read He Loves Me, and now that's expanded from reading It's Time and Just Love. It wasn't long ago that I was driving to work, and suddenly I could see the smallness of this world and God's greatness and majesty over all of it. And I could sense at that moment that so much of what we can see are man-made constructs. And they are just that, man-made constructs, things that humans have devised over the years. The main thing that I seemed to better understand was that our Father and Jesus don't need any of this. They are so far above all of this, and they have all of the solutions that we need. Not worry, because they're the only ones that can solve the world issues and bring light to the darkness, and that permeates so much of our existence here. But at the same time, I could sense their immeasurable love for the entire creation, and they have showed it to us over and over again. I do feel like creation is groaning. That's a bit of fullness right there. When your perspective shifts and you're being overwhelmed by all the man-made or human-made stuff, would make it more universal, include other people as well, or women, but it's human-made, and it can just weigh down on us. And then the recognition that Jesus and his Father are above all of this. And they don't need any of it. And they're going to have the end of the day in their way. They're at work for the redemption of creation itself.
Yeah.
And we get to be part of that with them. And that's a great perspective. That expands us into some marvelous space. And then I was on a podcast recently back in New York. I don't know if it's aired yet. In fact, I've never been notified about it. I'll have to check on that. And so we sat down to record the interview, and this is a guy that's got a brand new podcast, young guy, and he has a whole TV studio built down in his house because it's a video podcast.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, why didn't the God Journey have anything like this? Well, for one thing, we live in two different states. But
true.
Other than that, when Brad and I were here, we didn't do this? We didn't even think about video. I guess video is a thing now. Video is really growing. But he sat down and he said, how long have you been podcasting? And I said, 22 years. He said, kind of right at the beginning, right? And I went, yeah, it's kind of right at the beginning. And he did some searching on his computer, which I'm sure he got to an AI, and was asking it about the God Journey and 1,040 episodes over 22 years. Where does that fit in the landscape of podcasts? Mm. And I thought this was interesting because on the way out there, I'd watched a documentary on the airplane called The Age of Audio, which is all about podcasting.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is what AI says about the God Journey. Just for those of you, this is not content. This is about the show itself. Oh, okay. I would describe the God Journey as being in approximately the rarest 0.001% of podcasts for combined longevity and episode output. And when you add the distinction that across more than 1,040 episodes and 22 years, you have not sold advertising or solicited donations, the category becomes so narrow that I doubt a meaningful percentage can be calculated at all. A strong, accurate way to say it would be, with more than 1,040 episodes across 22 years, the God Journey belongs to a tiny fraction, likely less than 1,000th of 1% of podcasts ever produced. Can you imagine? If comparison had any meaning, which of course it does. Through all those years, it has never sold advertising or asked its listeners for donations. This is not just longevity. It is sustained generosity across virtually the entire history of podcasting. The conversation has always been offered as a gift rather than treated as a product to monetize.
Hmm.
That's pretty cool.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
And you've been on it the whole time. You've been on the journey the whole time.
Yeah, somehow I've not only been on the podcast, I've produced every one of these dudes and got them ready and put them out there. And it took me back, though, when I left his spot and I was thinking about this. And I told you, have a look at this Age of Audio. It is a new documentary. It's out about the whole history of podcasting from the very beginning, how it happened to today and what's changed across the landscape of it. As I was watching on the plane, I'm going, we made every decision backwards. There's not one decision in podcasting that we did, quote unquote, the right way, at least as far as the world would tell you to do it.
Yeah.
And this is from a guy who's got a little podcast and he started out and then he got some visibility and won some awards, but still struggles to make the podcast work. And, the whole book was how you build a podcast using money, whether it's donations or Patreon or advertising or sponsors. It's all about finding the means to do it because he said, while podcasting is free to your listeners, it is not free to you. And then you start adding up costs of web space and time and bandwidth and downloads and all the ways that people access the podcast. And I'm thinking, I've never once thought about any of that. Not once in 22 years, because it was just a joy to be able to put something out there at fairly low economic cost.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen, Livestream picks up all the costs of this thing. So and then you start going, okay, we've got a web guy and we got all the space and we got bandwidth and we've got. And so you think about all the money that adds up to this thing. And we were never bright enough to actually raise funds with it. Or sell advertising or do anything to monetize it.
It's not that you didn't have options, though. It's not that you didn't have people suggesting that you do that.
No, that we did. We had people who wanted to buy advertising on the God Journey.
Yeah.
And we said, no, we want to make it available free for everyone who wants to listen to it. And then we haven't sought the other things you're supposed to do, which is you beg people for likes. You beg people to give you a review because that expands your reach on the various podcast platforms, whether it's Spotify or Apple Podcasts, whatever. So likes, 5 stars, reviews, all those things are ways you get. And when I listen to a podcast, and the reason we've never done it here is because I listen to a lot of podcasts. When they do it, I want to puke. Here it goes. Poor us. And some of these are owned by major corporations.
Oh, yeah.
And you would think they would have money to throw into this thing. But they've got to make money for the organization. And that's measured every day by this podcast. What's the income? Will we keep doing it? Because we not only need it to break even, we need it to make money for the corporation.
Yeah.
And how much that begins to change the content of what you're doing, because you're chasing likes and you're chasing money. And now you start, whether you intend to or not, you pander to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why from the very beginning, I have one website I could go to and punch in and look at the number of listens we get for every episode that we do. And I never do it because I'm too weak to read those things and not let it influence me.
Yeah.
I've very long time not looked at those resources, even though people ask me, how many listeners you guys have at the Gadgets? It could be It could be 3 million. I have no idea how many people listen to this, and I don't want to know. And I certainly don't want to track it episode by episode, because got to reach a certain scale, and that would change what we talked about. This has just been a conversation with Brad and I, conversation with Sarah and I, conversation with Julie and I, conversation with you and I, and then guests from time to time, people we've had on here, not because they've got a book to sell, but because there's something going on in their life that was worth talking about. Yeah. And we had enough friendship with them for most of them. We made some mistakes back there. I had some people on later went, oh my gosh, they don't live what they talk about. So that's disappointing. But overall, we've tried to keep it to people we know so that the life backs the words and it's not just words. Anyway, you listened to that podcast. What did you think? Or you listened to that documentary?
The documentary. Yeah. So it's interesting because I was thinking about this when we were talking about doing a podcast about this. And I was actually thinking back to when some of our earliest conversations. So this would have been almost 15 years ago.
Not podcast conversations, just you and me.
Just you and I. Yep. Yeah. Just you and I having conversations. And we were talking a little bit about, okay, what does it look like for me to live in the world? What does it look like for me to, there was a lot of identity questions along those lines. And one of the conversations that we had was talking about building your platform, building your audience, putting things out there in the world that create a listening, like a listener base. And I remember thinking back on that and being like, huh, what did he mean by that? Did he mean in line with like the, more of the traditional thought in regards to the podcast? Because this is what this is what really resonated with me a lot about the documentary. When you've got all these young people out there that are thinking about being content creators or are thinking about, you know, I want to be an influencer, all these different things, and they're wanting to build not only their career off of this, but largely their identity, their shtick, their thing. And that's, it's like, okay, How do you work through that without getting caught up in what the world would tell you to do? How do you set down things intentionally to say, okay, I've got this message that's on my heart. I've got this thing that I'm passionate about that I really want to put out there to the world, but I also don't want it to get twisted because it can happen so fast. But it also it can be a very subtle build where, okay, I'm going to, like, I think about, there's one podcast that I listened to regularly for a long time. Then they started to get more popular. They started to get more listeners. Then they started to ask for donations. And then they're like, well, we want to be able to move this more into our full-time thing. And so then they wrote a book And it's not that the content wasn't phenomenal. It was life altering for me because it really changed the way that I approach scripture. It revitalized a passion for scripture for me. But now I have a hard time going and listening to it because the people are now celebrities and you can't really access the main people anymore. Like I used to be able to email the hosts and they would, you know, within a few days, they'd give me some feedback or whatnot or, you know, what. But now it's like, well, we've got our team, and if you're not a somebody, then you don't get access to this tier of our team without getting, you know, and I'm just like,
ugh, just yuck, you know, like, okay, well, there that goes, you know, that the, I don't even know what to say to that. And yet that's so the temptation, because it's like, okay, well, I have this idea, I have this message, I have this passion, and I want to be able to build content off of it. I want to be able to put it out there in the world in a meaningful way that helps people, whether that is a mechanics podcast or a gear podcast or a sociology podcast. I mean, whatever the content might be. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, to me, that's what I love about podcasting. When it first started, it was voices from the basement or the bedroom. It was not even high production values. It wasn't even thought about going video. It was just somebody had access to put their voice into the world. And if it got listened to, it would grow.
Yeah.
And if it didn't get listened to, it died away. But it wasn't about trying to use it to make a living.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to make their living? If you're creative, especially when you do a podcast or write books or do music, who doesn't want to make a life from their creativity? But the fact is, very few people can make it vocationally work. It just costs too much. And then I watched the whole podcasting industry change to where these celebrities, even news people who are on network television with their multi-million member audience, they start podcasts so they can expand their brand, and they can, and they get all these production values behind them. And all of a sudden, all the life is being sucked out of the room by these big behemoths who already have access to get their ideas in the world. But now they've got another platform we can monetize, and we can add more to our quiver, which all, I mean, it's always bothered me that famous musicians find some gifted children's book writer to write a book and put it in their name so they get it out in the world. And it's just, it's just cannibalizing other people's creativity because they have the machinery to make it work. And that's the way the world works. I mean, I'm not sitting here saying, oh, it shouldn't do that. That's the way it works, because money is the almighty thing.
Yeah.
Or popularity is the almighty thing. If it really is a message that you're true to and feel like you have a passion for, and you put it in the world, see if it takes wing. It'll be easier, I said to writers all the time, if you don't have to make a living at it.
Yes.
And when AI said, the conversation has always been offered as a gift rather than treated as a product to monetize. That's not on me. That's that really is God's gift. I always see the God journey as that. I get to be part of it, but I don't think, well, Wayne's done this for free because he's just so generous with everybody. God provided the means for us to do this without having to charge for it and without having to get advertisers. And when I hear advertisers on other people's shows, I skip them or I stop. Some podcasts start with, they have a couple of messages at the beginning, which are easy to skip. And then when they get a little bit brighter, they've got to go, we've got to put these ads all through the podcast. So people who are working out, whatever, got to get to their phone and try and change it. And by the time you do that, the ad's over. So it's the constant manipulation of the audience because it's got to be monetized.
Yeah.
For God to have let this be a gift. For me, I never thought we'd go 22 years. We've talked about this. I thought, we'd, you know, five or six, God would open the doors, we'd do something else. The fact is, God keeps bringing a new audience to the God journey. And I meet people who started out in our original, I don't see the God journey anymore. Well, I don't blame you. We're covering some new stuff in the last 4 years that have been wild. Yeah. But if you've gotten a connection with Jesus and now you have friends that you're having this conversation with, that was the desire behind the God journey. It wasn't to be your conversation. It was to be a catalyst to help you find that conversation where you live with your friends. And so when I think about it being a gift, I don't want people to think, oh, look how generous Wayne has been, or Kyle, or Brad, or all of you. I mean, we couldn't do this if you needed to make a living at it. Kyle, I can't afford to pay you that. But we can't afford to sit down for an hour a week and do this and then spend a couple hours getting it all edited up and put it out on the web. And we have been able to provide the website space and management for it. So we've just done it that way. I can't ever imagine switching. You know, and I do get that email sometimes about how you could monetize a gun. Let me show you how you could monetize this, or Patreon it, or, you know, have subscribers. A lot of people do that, where you just, you know, everybody gets a basic podcast, but there's a deeper one that people who pay for it. And I understand the economics of that. I'm not an idiot,
Yeah.
But when you talk about the gospel and you talk about putting a message in the world and you talk about using your creativity, Jesus's first priority is not to make you famous and not to make this your living. That's not his first priority. It may become that for a very slender minority. But it's the real joy is being able to put your creativity in the world or put what God has put on your heart into the world. Mm. And when I think about this, I'd encourage people with the same scripture that has tortured me all my life, which is at Luke 14, when you come into the banquet, take the last place and let the master invite you to the head table if you want to, instead of coming in and fighting for the positions of honor in a room.
Yeah.
And I think that has applied to ministry, to books, to websites, to whatever. I do what I feel like God's asked me to do in the world. The scope and reach of it is really up to him. And we talked about this a few months ago. Now, this latest rage, I get 10, 12 emails a week from some kind of person that wants to help me manipulate Listopia and Amazon.com and other book things to, you're wasting your creativity. You could maneuver this book over here to find this audience. And to me, it's backwards. If I find an audience, it'll be because people loved it enough to talk about it with their friends.
Yeah.
Whether that's a book or whatever. If I've got to beef that up by advertising or, and I just don't. We haven't felt inclined to do that. One, I think because we've had enough audience. I don't know that I need more. The load I get email-wise and some of that, it's sufficient. I'm not looking to expand my reach because we're not making money off of it anyway. So why would you just expand the reach to expand the reach? Or people ask, you know, what's Just Love sales like? Or, you know, I saw a spike in the sales and I'm going, okay, I don't even look at that and I don't want to know. Well, what must have happened? I don't care. And I know it's counterintuitive, and part of it's probably because I'm old enough not to need this to make my life work. And if it ends tomorrow, it ends tomorrow. Yeah. And I get to enjoy my retirement with Sarah. So I've been really content to put stuff into the world. And even when like the Shack goes huge, well, then the problems that causes did not inure to my benefit in many ways. So why play that game? And Sarah and I were reading this week, you know, when Jesus is asked about John the Baptist, and Jesus says, oh, there's not a guy better than him in the whole old covenant thing. And then he gets down to, how can I account for this generation? The people have been like spoiled children whining to their parents. We want to skip rope. We wanted to skip rope, and you were always too tired. We wanted to talk, but you were always too busy. John came fasting, and they called him crazy. I came feasting, and they called me a lush and a friend of the riffraff. Opinion polls don't count for much, do they? I read that now and just go, boy, that's so true. Once you get caught up in that one, once you get caught in the kingdom is business. Now you've got the mammon thing fighting against kingdom, and you'll gravitate more toward empire than you will to true and valid justice and ministry and love for people. So I look at all this saying, yeah, we did it all wrong. And yet everything I've known that started as just a genuine small thing, and like you said, it was beautiful. And then it grew to a place where it was less beautiful. It was now structured to reward the financially powerful. And it wasn't built to be a voice to people who just could hear it and maybe connect with Jesus in a way that's deep and beautiful and abiding.
Mm. Yeah, that's, I wrote down, why do we aspire to that? Why do we aspire to the bigger listening audience or the bigger audience? Or why do we aspire to be the small percentage of people that have this epic fame in the world and people know their name? And I was even thinking about a conversation that I had with a couple that we're getting to know, and they were hanging out at our house, and Jess was mentioning that I am a part of a podcast and a co-host for a podcast, and they're like, wait, what? Like you did and you do a podcast? And I was like, yeah, I do a podcast each week with a friend of mine. And, you know, we talk about all kinds of different things and everything from religion and faith and spirituality to sociology, to trauma, to counseling. I mean, all kinds of different things.
AI.
Yep. And then here's where the conversation changed. Jess said, yeah, he does the podcast with the co-author of The Shack. and their eyes got really big, and they're like, "Wait, what?
What is Jess? Jess needs to be a promoter or something."
Right? I know. And the conversation immediately shifted because now all of a sudden there's notoriety. Wait, that got turned into a movie, and that got to, you know, and there is all of this, and so then now all of a sudden the conversation went from like a personal interesting, like multifaceted conversation to a, oh, like, wow, there's more credibility to that now because he's talking to somebody who actually is somebody important. And it was just like,
yeah.
Oh, well, that conversation just took an uninteresting turn. And I don't know. Like, I think that's the hard part is we look to aspire, and Jess and I have had this conversation a fair bit because Jess, especially when she set out to become an Academy Award winning actress, that was, and as she and I have talked about the multiple layers that were behind that, one of the big things that came out of that was, I am so thankful that I didn't go down that road and didn't get drawn into the popularity world kingdom space that would have been if I would have said yes to her two breakout role opportunities that she had. She said that my life would not be the same and it wouldn't be for the better. Yes, I might have more money, I might have more resources, but it definitely would not be for the better. And the negative way that fame impacts people's lives, and you can't have a life of your own, and you can't enjoy simple, heartfelt relationships because you're always concerned about strings being attached. And yeah, it's like, why do we aspire to that space when that space so often is more destructive than it is life-giving?
I think because it makes people feel important.
Yeah.
Particularly if that's your need. If that need is not filled in there by your just your identity in Jesus and the fact that you're a beloved son or daughter of a gracious father.
Yeah.
So that you need that. I noticed in the aftermath of the Shack being really big in the first 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
I lost genuine friendships.
Yeah.
Just because every, like you just said, every person, particularly new people accessing my life, or really people I hadn't seen for a long time back from my past college days or whatever, they would get in touch with you. And there's like, oh, remember our friendship? And it's all this friendship stuff. And then they've got a project they want your help with, and they want an endorsement on this. And then if you do it, once you've done it, they're done. There was no desire for relationship, or people would come to meetings with manuscripts to give me, to do for me what you did for Paul. I remember having someone on the golf course ask me, it was a good friend too, had a book idea come to him and asked me, you know, how do I turn this into a bestseller? And we're talking about the story. And just at the initial, we're just talking about the story.
Yeah.
And then at the end, it was, how do I turn that into a bestseller? And I was going, I have no idea. Mm. What do you mean I have no idea? And I finally asked him, I said, why would you want to turn it into a bestseller? And they said, what do you mean? So I can live like financially free and independent. And I said, yeah, I get that. But what you're saying is I want this to be a bestseller so I don't have to trust Jesus anymore for how he cares for me. Mm. That myth of self-sufficiency we started the podcast with.
Yes.
And they genuinely got offended.
Really?
Genuinely got offended that I would ask that or posit that.
Mm.
And it was eye-opening to me. Because even when you want that kind of notoriety for your financial freedom, for whatever, it's really about serving you. Your art is not about serving the person who hears it, who's touched by it. Even if you write a poem that 6 people read and are touched deeply by it, can that be enough? And if it's not, and if we've got to find something bigger than that, and that's where I find people... At that point in my life, where mostly the people I were meeting wanted to use me for something under the guise of friendship and, you know, whatever. And even fairly famous people wanting to synergize, you know, whatever I could add to them, they could add to me. We could. And some people actually formalize that in ways that are strange to me. I just think the kingdom builds differently.
Mm.
I think that idea of Jesus leading us, guiding us, trusting the organic growth of something as opposed to a hyped up. If I've got to beg people to like this, and I've got to beg people, and I got to buy ads somewhere to make sure the God Journey gets listened to, that's all really about serving me.
Yeah.
Which is really different than the kingdom, which is how do we put something in the world to give life to people rather than, like we've talked before, turn it around so that I'm the one that's getting life from other people. And too often, that's what ministry becomes, sadly.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.